This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. Joining us in studio today is Ashley Sutherland, who's the Assistant Forest Manager at the Eliza Lake Research Forest, nonprofit, but you are existing within the walls of UNBC.
Yes, exactly. And very much integrated into the communities. So gotcha. a little bit of both, but
okay, great.
Formal Thanks. Separation.
Yeah, appreciate the clarity. So it's outside of city limits, Eliza Lake, but you are working on a project that is inside city limits, which is real interesting for us here at UMBC because you're looking at Shane Lake through the Shane Lake Amphibian Migration Project. This past year of 2025, you got a foundational set of data figured out. To start off for listeners, though, why is it important to be looking at where amphibians are around Shane Lake? Why should we care about these little slimy creatures that sometimes scare us when we try to pick them up or someone chases us around with them?
Well, first off, I guess we should care about amphibians because we share the planet with them, and we should care about all things that we share the planet with. Yeah, so we're looking at where they're occurring on the trail system around Shane Lake, because what I've noticed when I've been out there on my own recreating is that amphibians are finding their way onto the trail, and because of their numbers, maybe, and possibly also because they're very difficult to see when they're newly emerged toadlets, so just transformed from tadpoles that year, that they're so tiny, and they blend very well with the trail substrate. And often people are walking the trail and they don't realize until they have maybe already trampled on some toadlets. And I'm trying to draw attention to this concern and maybe change public opinion and educate a little bit.
Sometimes we head out to Forest for the World or Shane Lake and we think we're getting out of the city. Oh, it feels so good to be in the nature. And that's absolutely true. But then all of a sudden we are in that different environment. And we have to interact with things perhaps a little more carefully than we're used to on a cement sidewalk.
Yes, absolutely. So we've got actually some really beautiful habitat that's seems to be quite healthy right now for amphibians and other creatures that live in the area. And part of the goal of the project is just raising awareness about sharing our recreational space with amphibians and I guess ultimately, I suppose, all of the animals that live there. It's just amphibians happen to be the sort of poster child of the project. Mm-hmm. And what are the vulnerabilities and where can we mitigate those impacts?
Before I get into kind of how you're assessing the situation, you mentioned it is a remarkably healthy ecosystem. What is it about Shane Lake that drew your focus to this project? Why did you decide to focus on Shane Lake in terms of amphibians?
I was there as a recreator with my dogs in 2022, and I witnessed this myself for the very first time with toadlets all over the trail. And there was no signage. Nobody was stopping and turning around and going the other direction when they encountered them. At least this was what I was observing anyway. I became highly upset by this. I went back to my vehicle in the parking lot and I emailed the city saying, this is crazy. Do something about it. And nothing really happened. And then I ended up at a job that allowed me to sort of pursue this passion project as an aspect of my work. Really, I focused on Shane Lake, well, because I've observed it there, even though I know that this is a concern so many other places. But in addition to that, my employer, Eliza Lake Research Forest Society, is partnered with UNBC, and the south end of the project area is on UNBC endowment land. And it's just kind of a natural fit in terms of a partnership. And the mandate of the research forest is like research, education, community outreach. And it's just kind of a natural fit with what we do. And I mean, maybe one day SLAM will reach out to other areas. I know there is a need so many other places, and maybe SLAM will grow to other places.
But for now, Shane Lake has, you know, the familiarity, the access, and the traffic. It's a great case study.
Absolutely.
And with the strength of this, perhaps you will be able to expand to other areas.
Totally. Yeah. And being that it's a very popular recreation area within city limits, it's I think the biologist that's been advising on this project, this is what he's said, so I'm not directly quoting him, but close, that it's a great place to observe the interaction between humans and the natural environment because of its accessibility.
One of the remarkable harbingers of spring, when things continue to warm up a little further down the road, is seeing all the amphibians emerge out of the environment and out of the forest. It's one of those remarkable things that we actually get to witness where we're living here in Prince George, clearly today.
Yep.
So I understand, to quantify that, you've hired surveyors through this program to survey the loop trail around Chain Lake, which is in the Forest for the World Municipal Park, adjacent to UMBC, or the University of Northern British Columbia. And the surveyor identifies all the various areas that are significant sections of habitat, keeping a keen eye out for toadlet crossings. But if I understand correctly, one of the ways that community members can contribute to the project is through the iNaturalist app. Is that right? And today's March 20th. And this happens to be the anniversary of iNaturalist app. Is that right?
Yeah. So today is the 18th birthday of iNaturalist. 18 years ago today, the first observation was uploaded to iNaturalist. And that is a way that any member of the public, if they're visiting Chain Lake, may contribute to observations of the Chain Lake Amphibian Migration Project through community science.
Right. And once upon a time, projects like this were totally reliant on funding or a grant of some kind, and then specifically research being hired to collect minuscule data, which took very long lengths of time to get data to then make a difference. But in this way, individual community members are empowered to actually participate in programs like this. And should we choose, we can observe amphibian activity as well and report it to your project and help the whole thing kind of get traction.
Absolutely. Anybody, a member of the Chain Lake Amphibian Migration Project team via use of the iNaturalist app.
Effective participation through your using your smartphone for perhaps a force of good.
Yes.
It's still possible.
Absolutely.
With these smartphones.
We
can still do something positive
with
them.
It's not all evil.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one aspect of how community members can actually contribute to tracking and observing amphibian data around the Chain Lake area. And this project also has another area of community outreach as well. I understand this summer you're moving into Active Minds Camp, which is a youth camp here at the university.
Yep. It's at this stage more just ideas. But some ideas are maybe some guest lectures, maybe going out with the day camp participants and doing like little mock surveys with them, teaching them about amphibians in the natural environment, teaching them about the vulnerabilities that they face. And I'm hoping we can really teach people about, if they must handle amphibians, what is a safe way of doing that. Amphibians, one of their biggest vulnerabilities is that they breathe through their skin. So when they are handled, even the oils on the skin can really harm their health, but especially if people are handling them with bug sprays or sunscreens, which a lot of people, when they're out in the natural environment, have on their bodies. If amphibians are being handled and coming into contact with those toxins, that is really, really detrimental to their health. So I'm hoping that we can integrate some aspects of safe handling if we must. Of course, we don't want to encourage handling, but if we must, we like to observe just with our eyes. But if we must handle them, how can we do it as safe as possible for the critters that we're handling?
So a little side note, running contrary to popular urban myth, you might actually be giving the toad toxins.
Totally. It goes the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least, you know, at least with the species in this region are the ones I can speak to.
Certainly. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't have the poison arrow dart frogs in Prince George, Chain Lake.
No. Luckily. Lucky for us.
So phase one of the project was looking at, you know, collecting data, figuring out where amphibians are entering the trail system, that kind of thing. Moving into phase two, are you expanding upon that data? What does phase two look like?
Phase two looks like an additional season worth of research or data collection to expand on the 2025 data collection and maybe confirm the locations where we saw the concentration in 2025. We are doing more research and data collection we are for at least one more season in 2026. I'll have to see funding-wise where we're at in 2027 and how consistent is the data from 2025 to 2026. Are we seeing toadlets in the same areas? Are we seeing them in totally different areas? Like, what does the data look like? So that ultimately, whether we do one more season of data collection will be determining that. We'll probably be about a year on from now once we get a feel for what the 2026 data says. But the data from phase one and two with the research will drive phase three, which is ultimately the long-term objective of boardwalk construction, trail bridging structures, so that we can mitigate, in an ideal world, eliminate, that's probably not going to happen, but at least mitigate some of this mortality of toadlets due to trampling by trail users. So there's a lot of uncertainty associated with that. Largely, it's a funding one. That's a part of the project that is just, at this stage, it's kind of insurmountable, the amount of money I need to raise to really, when I'm looking at the stretches of trail from 2025 where we saw toadlets, there were like six trail sections in the loop around Chain Lake. And those trail sections, super rough and dirty, not, you know, like a very quick mapping exercise, but those trail sections spanned about 480 meters over those six sections. I think the loop around Chain Lake's maybe like 1.6 kilometers. So it's about a quarter of the trail is these six sections.
Right.
And I've been quoted approximately $1,000 per meter. So I'm looking at about $500,000 to get this done.
That's a lot of meters and a lot of dollars.
It's a lot, yes. Yeah. So it's little by little. Luckily, it's six sections. I can pick away at the sections. It doesn't have to all be done at once. It's not continuous. So that's the silver lining.
Yeah. The data you're collecting now is driving what the solution will actually look like, and you're hoping that solution will involve bridging structures, yes, boardwalks, things like that to protect amphibians
mitigation
from foot traffic.
Yeah, mitigation structures, certainly. I guess, if we can call them that, yeah.
And I guess focusing on some of these solutions, you mentioned boardwalks. Are there other types of ways of mitigating foot traffic? Is that the primary thing? Are there little tunnels you can build underneath the trails?
Yeah, I think right now it's boardwalks, but my understanding is that the city of Prince George has like small utility vehicles that they run on these trails as well. So we need to be able to accommodate things like that, be it a wider structure and probably a bit beefier construction, so a bit more expensive. I think there's certainly the opportunity and the consideration for like subsurface structures like culverts. But one thing we need to be mindful of, as I understand it, I'm a forester, I'm not a biologist, so I'm learning as I go. But as I understand it, boardwalks are a better solution or quite large culverts because amphibians, they need to be kind of daylit from both ends and mostly the whole way through for amphibians to, I guess, feel comfort in using them as a pattern because they're less inclined to use dark holes. There might be predators waiting for them in there. So as far as I understand it, that's kind of, there's some limitations associated with just throwing a culvert in the ground and assuming they're going to use it.
Speaking of hopefully continuing that community support, the SLAM project is hoping to raise some funds for the incredible potential cost of boardwalks and trail systems being installed at the Chain Lake area. And you've managed to get grants also to support this project, people working as doing surveying, things like that. But you're selling stickers and you're hoping to raise some funds so that you can propel this project forward. Where can we find these stickers?
Yeah, well, we can find stickers currently at seven locations around Prince George. Three of those locations are on UMBC campus, so down in the Thirsty Moose Pub. We also have them at Degrees in Building 10, and they are also in the UMBC bookstore. If we're moving off campus, we have them at Books & Company, Ruckus, Deadfall Brewing, and Overhang Climbing Gym. 100% of the proceeds come back to myself, where then they're all rolled back into the project. So at this stage, I'm thinking the sticker money will go back into the pool of funds that are very, very slowly building for building boardwalks. But I do need about $500,000 to do that. And I've got net, when I take away the cost of the stickers, I've got about, it'll be about $8,500 once I sell all 2,000. And I'm a long ways from selling the 2,000 right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of stickers to sell to get to the goal. You know, if someone happens to stumble upon a bag full of $500,000 and they want to support the SLAM project with it, or maybe they have less or maybe they have more, do they have to just buy stickers or how else can they support the SLAM project?
No, they could write a check to the Eliza Lake Research Forest Society, definitely not to me. So to my employer, and that money will go straight into a pool that will move through my employer to the organization that's doing the work, however that's going to work. There's still a lot to figure out here, as you might be and your audience might be gathering. I'm figuring it out as I go, but in terms of where money is being stored, it's all going to my employer and being held there. Yeah. So that's the same with the sticker money. Most of it is rolling in. What I have received is rolling in through cash. It's currently sitting in a glass jar in my office, and it will go into the Eliza Lake Research Forest bank account at some stage to then be rolled back into the project.
Ashley Sutherland, thank you so much for joining me in the studio today. Speaking with us today is the Assistant Forest Manager of Eliza Lake Research Forest about the SLAM project. That's the Shane Lake Amphibian Migration, hopefully to become program.
Yes.
We'll see what happens with funding in the future.
Hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
We'll see what happens. Thank you so much for having me, Ian.
Absolutely.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or CFUR.ca.